In the Talmud Dvora, and we're up to the fourth attribute, Lish'erit Nachlato, to the extension, Lish'erit Nachlato, to the remnant extension that is his lot. The people of Israel are called She'erit, She'er, the extension. You guys have it in your editions? You seem lost. Okay, so the fourth attribute, Lish'erit Nachalato. We are called the extension of Hashem. We are His portion. In Hakadosh Baruch Hu Neg Yisrael Bederech Ze. This is how Hashem deals with us. Lomar Ma'asel Yisrael V'hem Kovai Sher Basal Imhem. God says, so to speak, they're my family. What am I going to do? You know, it's like the guy who catches his son stealing from the cash register. What do you do now? You know, I trusted him behind the cash register. He did wrong, but now what? He's my son. What am I going to do? You're going to find yourself in that situation. Sometimes your kid does something that, if anyone else did it, you'd destroy him. But it's your own kid. Now what are you going to do? So, what does Hashem say? All of us, the people of Israel, are the extension of Hashem, so to speak. Shehem bat zug lakadosh baruch hu. We are, so to speak, Hashem's mate. Vekore labiti achoti imi. Hashem, in His love for us, calls us His daughter, His sister, His mother. All different terms. The Medrash tells us in the Song of Songs that Hashem loves us so much that He uses every form of expression of closeness for the Jewish people. Kidabil Shuzan, as the Medrash in Shir Shirim Rabbah says, V'chtiv, Yisrael am kirovo, the verse says, we are the nation that He's so close to. Mamashku v'ayishloi me'em uvanavim, Hashem says, so to speak, you're my relatives, we're close, you're my children. V'haynu lisharit na'achlato l'shon sher basar. Hashem speaks of us as though we're an extension of His flesh, as though we were part of His family. Sof sof hem nachlato, and ultimately we are His lot, so to speak. Uma omer, what does Hashem say about His people? Im ani shem, hare akev alai, if I punish them, who's going to get hurt by it? And this is a phenomenal concept. I can tell you that many times as a parent, you do something to the kid, he deserves the punishment, and you go off to the other room and you cry more than he does. You have to do it as a parent, and you're more troubled by what you've done than him. I remember once one of the kids went bike riding without a helmet. So the first time you tell the kid, the second time you tell the kid, the third time you say, you're not going bike riding. I can tell you till today I feel bad. I had to tell him, you're not going bike riding. Today everyone else is riding their bikes, you're not riding your bike. Because if when I say it, you don't understand, so I'm going to have to do something else. So you will understand. You're too precious to me. But you know what? When you're really connected to someone, say even though you're doing what you have to do, it hurts you sometimes even more than him. I'm willing to bet he doesn't even remember. Proof of the pudding, he did it again. But me, I'm still eating my heart out because at that time I had to tell him no. I had to do it. But when someone's an extension of you, you feel for them, and sometimes you feel, you know the famous story of Rav Aryeh Levin? You guys hear of Rav Aryeh Levin? There was a big sage here in Jerusalem, Rabbi Aryeh Levin. He used to visit the Jewish captives in the British prisons. Sometimes they were on death row, and he'd sit with them, and he'd try to strengthen them, and he'd bring their messages back to their wives. So he was a rabbi with a long white beard, a big Haredi rabbi. And he was famous for the care he had for every single human being. And even the non-religious, when they'd be imprisoned by the British because they were fighting to free Israel from British control, so he would go and sit with them one by one and strengthen them. He was considered, there's a whole book about him, a tzaddik in our time. You could read it in the English library. So the story goes that he once went with his wife to the doctor. So the doctor said, what's the issue? So Rabbi Levin said, well, my wife's leg is hurting us. It's hurting us. It's hurting him like it's hurting her. No, thank you. Thank you. So that's the extension that a person's supposed to feel, that Hashem says, Am Yisrael is an extension of Hashem. Kedestiv, as the verse says, B'chol tzaratam lo tzar. And the prophet Isaiah, God says, whenever they suffer, he suffers, so to speak. Kedestiv be'alef, lomar she'tzaram magia lepele ha'elyon, v'chol shken du'par tzufin, sh'ben ikar hanaga, v'karinan bevav lo tzar. So he goes into a Kabbalistic concept here, which I don't understand, so I can't explain. We will see in Judges, Hashem says, so to speak, he couldn't handle it anymore when we were suffering. Hashem says, so to speak, he can't handle it when we're suffering because we are an extension of him. So that's step number one. Hashem's mercy is that he treats us as an extension of himself. By the same token, each person with his fellow man. Kol Yisraelim Sheol Basar Elu Imelu. We're all an extension of one another. Mipnei Shan Shamot Klulot Yachad, because our souls are really one. Yesh Bezech Elikzeh Ubezech Elikzeh. Each one has a part of him in another. So you're sitting on a bus, and suddenly you smell a stench. You look up, and this burly man boards the bus. And you smell that he's not very good at containing himself. And you smell that he probably hasn't had a shower in 2 weeks. And you can see he hasn't had a haircut in a long time. And he hasn't cut his nails. And he starts advancing in the bus. And what's the first thing that crosses your mind? Oh no, there's a seat available next to me, right? But do we see in him an extension of ourselves? Lish'erit nachlato. Hashem says, we're all an extension of one another. And this is a trait that a person can work on developing within oneself. How do I view the other person? And that's why our sages teach that when we join together to perform a mitzvah, it has so much more weight. Because we are connected. That's why our sages taught, if you're going to be one of the first 10 in shul, afilu mea ba'im acharav, even if 100 people come in, imagine Machon Meir, you're going to wake up early tomorrow morning, you're going to be from the first 10. The Talmud says, even if 100 people come into daven after you, mekabel tzachar kulam, you get everyone's wages. They get theirs and you get equal, because you're the one that started the minyan. So you join a huge minyan, you're from the first 10, so then everyone's davening, you get merits for it. Why is it 100? Because each 10, you're a part of each, and each is a part of each. So that's why we say we're all an extension of one another. So let's say, how many people are we here in class? We're 9 people. So I am an extension of everyone here, so I am 9. You are an extension of everyone here, so you are 9. But I'm an extension of you. So if you're 9 and I'm an extension of you, so I'm 9 because of you too.
We're just 1, I guess.
And if I'm an extension of him, so he's also 9. So then that's also, I'm an extension of him. So you understand? So that's why it says if you have 10, they're equal 100. Because each one's an extension of the other. V'chol echad me'im kalul mi'meah. So each one is like he's 100. Im ken afilu yavo me'ah. Ha'u yesh lo sachar me'ah. So just the 10 already have those wages. V'chen mitam zeh Yisrael arivim zeh lazeh. So we have a phenomenal halachic concept that we have mutual responsibility to perform mitzvos. Shabbos night, you make kiddush. We've been in the hospital many times Friday night, Shabbos. After I make kiddush to my wife, I go to the maternity ward to make kiddush for the midwives there, because very often they're busy giving birth. They don't have time to hear kiddush. So I discovered that some of them are so pious, they won't eat a thing until they hear Kiddush. Even though they're working, they're saving lives, but they didn't hear Kiddush. So sometimes they'll wait till 11, 12 o'clock at night till they come home, till their husbands make Kiddush, and then they'll eat something. So I go there an hour after Kiddush time, an hour and a half, I check if they need to hear Kiddush. So they'll hear Kiddush from someone. They could make Kiddush for themselves, but I guess they don't want to. I don't know. Rosh Hashanah morning. We're going to blow shofar. How come I could make kiddush for that woman? I already made kiddush. How come I could blow shofar for someone else? I already blew shofar. So there's this halacha concept called arevim. We're all co-signers for one another. We share responsibility. I didn't finish my mitzvah of kiddush till every Jew heard kiddush. So when I make it for him, that's part of my responsibility too. That's why I can make it on his behalf, because I didn't finish doing my job. I can blow shofar for someone else, because if I just blew shofar for me, but there's still another Jew who didn't hear shofar, so I'm still responsible for him. So I can blow shofar on his behalf. So this is our halachic concept. This is why we can do mitzvot on behalf of one another, certain mitzvot. מפני שממש יש בכל אחד חלק מאחד מחברו. Because that's this idea that we are enjoined, we are intertwined, there's a part of me and you, there's a part of you and me, there's a part of each other and each other. וכשחוטא האחד, פוגם עצמו, פוגם חלק של חברו בו. So let's say one person does something wrong, he's not only affecting himself, he's affecting everyone who's a part of him too. We bring all of Am Yisrael up, we bring all of Am Yisrael down. When we move forward, we're moving the world forward with us. נמצא מצד החלק ההוא חברו ערב עליו, אם כן ושאר זה עם זה. So that's this idea, that we're co-signers, we're all attached, and we can all help pull one another forward. ולכך, and therefore, ראוי לאדם להיות חפץ בטובתו של חברו. So a person should want what's good for his friend. It's an extension of me. ואינו טובה על טובת חברו. And he should have a good eye. He should want his friend to have it good. Most people can't have a good eye. You know, they tried this. They offered people, we'll give you a raise, but your coworker who does the same job will give him double. Do you want the raise? Most people said no. I can have it good. He could have it good, but I don't want him to have it better. This idea of having a good eye, do I want what's good for someone else? So we all smile when someone tells us they got a raise, they got a promotion. Good for you, I'm so happy for you. Are you really? Or are you thinking, gee, you a bum, why'd you get that raise and not me? So somewhere deep inside of us, we have that little devil that's always asking, hey, I want it. Even in conversation, if everyone's praising someone, so we have a little voice inside us that says, why aren't they talking about me? Mark Twain once said, when they praise me, I feel bad because I feel they didn't praise me enough. And then I feel embarrassed that I feel bad because it's not nice, right? But I don't remember who said that the greatest thoughts are those thoughts that really everyone has, but no one feels comfortable expressing. Suddenly you see, hey, wait a second. So we're all contending with that. So this is a trait that's hard to develop, to have a good eye, to really be happy when someone else has it good. How come is it that with regards to our own children, Chazal say a normal person wants his children to do better? Why is it? Chazal say a normal teacher wants his students to excel beyond him. A normal parent wants his children to excel beyond him. You want them to be more successful than yourself. A parent should not be jealous of his child. A normal parent wants what's better for his child. He wants him to do better than him. Why? What do you say, Ari?
Because the child is it's an extension of them. It's their legacy. Oh. So therefore, you know, their legacy will like all of their hard work will carry on through their child who they leave, you know, like both when they're living and when they die. So therefore, you know, they want success. And also, like that's like the selfish way to look at it. And then I guess the less selfish way is that, you know, if you truly love the child, like you just want, you know, you actually want like what's best for them, like in wholeheartedly, you know, like and if what's best for them is like success in whatever their endeavors are, then you just want them to succeed with joy and happiness and fulfillment.
I'm not sure that one is exclusive of the other. It could be that one causes the other. For many years, I was bothered by this piece in the Tomer Dvora. Because I'm online in the previous series that we did this, where I said what you just said, that this is pretty selfish. The Tomer Dvora is telling us to love our fellow man because he's an extension of me, so I'm really loving myself. Yeah? Love him because he's a part of you. So who do you love? I'm loving the me that's in him. So it always struck me, why does he say that? But as I've matured a little bit and hopefully learned something in life, I've come to appreciate that perhaps one causes the other. Meaning when a baby's born, what do you love about the baby? How come you come to the nursery, you're going to see your baby's born, I'll get you in a minute. You come to the nursery, there are 500 babies there. You can't tell your baby from the next one. But when they tell you that's yours, you pick him up and your heart melts. And you sit there and he's so cute and he's so amazing. And 5 minutes later, the nurse comes in and says, I'm sorry, I gave you the wrong one. I'm sorry, let me bring you the other one. And what's going on here? You check the tag, she's right, this wasn't mine. Now the next one, he's so cute, he's adorable. So when, for starters, what you really love about the baby is that he is an extension of yourself. Do you really think he's the cutest thing on earth? Yeah, maybe, because he's an extension of yourself, just like people are very good about themselves in many other ways. But as time goes on, you start developing a love, like you said, that's a love for who he is. But I think maybe there are two steps in a process, and I think that many people never take these steps in marriage. They never see the wife as a real extension of themselves. There's always this competition between them. But if they would, then initially they would love the person who's an extension of themselves, and then they'd evolve. And the same thing with our fellow Jew. Someone comes on that bus, how do I view him? I once had a neighbor who had, he still has, serious issues. He's like not all there. Come knocking on my door at 1 o'clock in the morning, and I'd answer the door like groggily half asleep. Halvai, I was half asleep. Unfortunately, I was awake. And I'd say, hi, what's doing? And he'd say, I was wondering, do you have a tissue? So, I'm telling you a true story. So I'd say, Chaim, I know you're 3 flights up, but I believe you probably have a tissue too. She says, yeah, my nose is really running and I can't make it all the way up. Can you give me a tissue? So the first reaction is, hey, what's wrong with this guy? Then you realize there's something wrong with him. So then what's the next reaction? So I forced myself to put a smile and say, Chaim, I'm so happy you knocked. I actually have an extra tissue. Give me just a second. Let me get you a tissue. And I'd get him a tissue. He'd knock on the door and say, you know, I'm really thirsty. And I have a ride coming in 5 minutes. And I'd say, you know, you can make it up and down in 5 minutes. And he'd say, yeah, but... And I'd get him a drink. And I'd force myself to act kindly to him. And you know what? Over a very short period of time, I was able to really like him. Either something really wrong with a guy that knocks on your door at 1 o'clock in the morning because he wants a tissue and he doesn't want to go up 3 flights to get his own tissue. There's something wrong with him. But that's not his fault. And if we force ourselves to look at him positively, so other neighbors, I was the second door he knocked on. The other neighbor listens from nothing. And the next morning comes to me and says, how do you answer him like that? So I said, well, if you realize it's not his fault, this is how he sees reality. So you have to deal with it. So he walked into my house once without knocking. So I made up the name Chaim. That wasn't his real name, but we'll call him Chaim. So I said, Chaim, you know, I'm so happy to see you, but you know, I'm going to call the police on you now. So he said, what do you mean? I said, well, you walked in without knocking, and I think that if people walk into the house without knocking, you have to call the police. So give me just a minute, and we're going to call the police. All calmly and nicely. So he said, are you serious? I said, yeah, of course I'm serious. I'm willing to make a deal with you, Chaim. This time I won't call the police. But you walk in again without knocking, you should know I will call the police. We're going to be friends even after you go to jail. But I will call the police. Wait a second. On his level, I had to talk to him on his level. This is what he understood. I can't be upset at him. He didn't understand. There's something wrong with walking into someone's house without knocking. He didn't understand. He never walked in again without knocking. Never again. But nicely, I told him, it's nothing personal, but you know, people do call the police if someone walks in without knocking. He didn't understand that, but I told it to him. I said, you know what, this time we're going to forgo it. But we're still going to be friends. We're still friends till today. His level. If you can see him as an extension of yourself, so then he's less annoying. You know, it's not his fault. He's an extension of me. I can have patience for him. I can love him. How do his parents deal with him? You know, no one asks for this kind of case. But yeah, what are you going to do? So we have a choice. How am I going to view him? Is he that annoying neighbor? Oh, no! Or is he that guy who, it's an opportunity for me to be a nice human being and be nice to him, and it takes patience, and it's a decision we make. And we discussed this last time. We said this is a whole philosophy in one sentence. We don't control the stimuli. We control that little window of opportunity before the reaction. I don't control who's going to come knocking on my door, but I do control what my reaction to him is going to be. So I think, going back to what you said, I think that what the Tomer Dvor is saying, and this is something which I've realized over time, is that from seeing him, from going this route of seeing him an extension of myself, over time I can actually feel positive towards him. I can love him for who he is, not only because he's an extension of me. But if you'll go to the recording of this, 1 year ago, 2 years ago, 3 years ago, you'll see I always left this as a question. Isn't this selfish? This is over time I see it. Yes, Uri.
I was going to say earlier that we have views sometimes that power is not there just to bring us soil, that we can turn it on itself and make it serve Hashem. So why not capitalize on selfishness? If you get a selfish pleasure out of helping your child succeed in life, then that's using the Yitzhar to serve. And then hopefully you'll get to the point after that where it's selfish, but like the Soviet Union was all about that, like, oh, let's serve the Soviet Union so selflessly. Doctors, who needs Japan, will do it because they want to. Whereas, a capitalist system where, the guy really wants to make a dollar, so he better do a good job on your surgeries, not be more successful. So is that appropriate base entry-level people who morality is not so big with, so capitalize on selfishness.
There's an element of truth in that. Chazal also tell us that part of the reason we behave ourselves is because we're worried about the repercussions of what would happen if we didn't. Meaning, we discussed last time in the Netivot Shalom, this idea that there's a root within each of us that can give forth fruit that we're so embarrassed, we wish we could uproot that root. Meaning, there's a potential for doing things that we'd be embarrassed if other people would know what potential we have. And we can't uproot it. And so sometimes you're right. That's what Chazal say. You need authority, otherwise people are beating one another up alive. So there's an element of an animal within each of us that's contained for improper reasons, impure reasons. And with time we grow from that. I think, though, that when it comes to parents and children, under normal circumstance, a parent should want what's best for his child, that should be there. Meaning, I agree with you that if it's not there, so then, okay, and you propagate it. That's a way of...
interesting, if you marry somebody, at what point you're like, oh, I married them, and yeah, they're attracted to me, I married them, and someone's like, oh, you're marrying them because they're attracted to you. And then I like the personality. Yeah, you like the personality. You're getting something out of it. Sometimes I think Hashem put these desires in us so we can derive mutual pleasure from these acts of kindness. We do something for someone and we get nachas, right? Knowing that they like what you did for them. We can automatically call that selfish pleasure because you just feel like they're reciprocating their feelings to you.
So, two things. The example you gave is beautiful. There's a Rashi that said what you just said. I didn't connect the two thoughts. But there's a Rashi in the beginning of Yuma and possibly in Brachos that says this idea that the beginning of marriage, the beauty plays a greater role in keeping the two together. And as the relationship evolves, so then the relationship is less about the external beauty and more about the connection. The Rashi seems to say that. In the beginning of the 8th chapter of Yuma. And the second idea, which you said, that we do have perks. It's very hard for us to do something completely altruistically. Everything we do, there's some benefit that we get out of it. Sometimes it's just that good feeling that I did something good. So that's also a thought that's expressed on many occasions. I'm not sure there's anything wrong with it, though. It's good that I feel good when I did something good. But let's finish this thought in the Tomer Dvora. Back to the Tomer Dvora. Umitam zenitztavinu v'avtal racha kamocha. That's why we were commanded, love your friend as yourself. Because we're all an extension of one another. V'ro'u shi'yirtze b'kashut chavero v'lo yidaber b'gnuto klal v'lo yirtze bo. Ooh, what a line. And what's fitting is that a person should want his friend to get it right. And a person shouldn't say anything that's shameful about his friend. And shouldn't even want it. He shouldn't even want his friend to fail. The same way, Hashem doesn't want our shame or our pain. Because we're close. So to he shouldn't want his friend's shame, his pain, his failures. On the contrary, it should bother him if his friend is suffering. As though he himself were there. Or when things go good, he should be happy for him. And this is something we can develop. this good eye, to see the good in the other person, to see me in the other person, and to develop a love for our fellow man. And one thing I have to say, we're not talking about levels of piety like being huge tzaddikim. These are things that every one of us can attain. This is accessible, and that's why we're learning it. It might seem that way in the beginning. It might seem very hard. But with time, a person can attain this. There's a classical example to this. When you disagree with someone, or when you rebuke someone, or when you tell someone they got it wrong, how careful are we not to do that where other people will hear? I always say, you listen to Harusa and the Beis Medrash, when you think you got it right and you have a proof against him, you say you're wrong. But when you realize he's right, so suddenly there's this little whimper, you're right. You ever notice how we're all that way? But we should at least, on when we're challenging, we're saying you're wrong, we should at least have that care for the other person to say it gently. We should be as interested in their saving face and their feeling good about themselves as we are about ourselves. Now, this is hard. It doesn't come naturally. But we can develop it. So,